Blog Talk Radio.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet, sharing our living, our dying, our birth, and we won't stand by watching her die.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak with your host, Beth Miller. All points of view must be brought to light if we're to reach the wisest solutions to challenges we face. Guests on Your Turn to Speak have unusual insights to bring to the collective conversation. They have been invited because of the positive impact of their loving presence on Earth. Though their ideas may be hidden by the glare of the mainstream focus, their perspectives are guaranteed to inspire and enrich us all. And now, here's your host, Beth Miller.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak. I am your host, Beth Miller. My guest tonight is Reverend Christine Kelly, who works in the fields of spiritual counseling and nursing. Christine has been aware of her clairvoyant abilities since childhood, and like many of us, she shied away from them and buried herself in the, quote, real world around her. Her unique abilities surfaced in her personal life and career at every turn. She found herself drawn to work that allowed her to heal and help those around her through her career as an LPN and then as an addiction counselor in the medical facilities in the Central New York area. Her family life reflected all that she was and did as she raised children and now dotes on her grandchildren. In 2006, she turned her attention to the metaphysical world that she had been trying to avoid all these years and began classes from the ministers at the Fellowships of the Spirit at Lilydale. She became an ordained minister in the late spring of 2008. The talents and tools Christine uses to help and guide her clients include mediumship, counseling, nursing, energy work, and prophecy. I am delighted to introduce to you Reverend Christine Kelly. Reverend Kelly, it's your turn to speak.
Thank you so much, Beth. I'm so happy to be with you this evening. It's a great program.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure to have you and my honor. So I wonder, maybe we can begin tonight by having you tell us a little bit about your spiritual journey, where it began, where it took you, how has it led you to who you are now?
Okay, sure. The earliest recollection I have is I was about 3 or 4 years old, and it was in the evening hours, and the stars were starting to come out. We were in our front lawn with my father, and I looked up, he said, "What a beautiful sky tonight. Aren't those stars beautiful?" And I said, "Yes. Who made them?" And he said, "God." And I said, "Who's God?" And I realized from a very young time that would be a question I would be, that would be something I'd be questioning all my life. And it started me on my path, I think, at that point. And, you know, curiosity was a lot of it. People would say, "This is why we do things," or "This is how we do things." And I think I wanted to know more than just something about reading in books. And I had some experiences mm-hmm. when I was young. I started to mm-hmm. see things or hear things and began to think, "Oh, boy." And at first, of course, I wouldn't repeat those to anyone because I thought they're really not going to believe me and, you know, they're going to think something's really off here. So at a young mm-hmm. age, I really began to shut a lot of that down, and over time began to trust it a little bit more and more when I would have ideas in nursing. My intuition would start coming through, and I would know when a patient was going to be having difficulty or, you know, was getting near time to pass over. So I began to trust it through those years. But I think it's been slowly coming to me over the years more and more to trust. And what happened at different turns were, you know, trying to find answers to life changes that are unexpected, and we don't really have the answers that we used prior because we're dealing with new experiences and we have to seek out other means of coping. And I think along the spiritual path, we find that. And so for me, the more I studied or questioned, I began to find a lot of comfort in the spiritual path. And I find that true for now than ever.
I see. Did you have any kind of traditional religious foundation either, you know, in for your own development, or was that not really a part of it?
Yes. Actually, I was raised a Catholic, and I followed it very strictly and believed in a lot of the rules and followed them. And but one thing I will say that happened to me along my path was when I changed from religion more to spirituality, I started to let go of a lot of fears I had. You know, if I do this wrong, I'm going to be punished. And I think finding that revelation was huge for me. I was a bit of a worrier, and that was not a good mix to be the free spirit I think I always wanted to be, or, and now have come to know that I am. That really frees me up to be, you know, open to many different things.
Did you have anyone who was a particular inspiration in your in your earlier years?
My grandmother. My grandmother was very much a practicing Catholic, and she would say the rosary, but I remember from a young age, I was quite young, and she would say to me, come on, honey, and have a nap, you know, because she was very gentle in her spirit. And so I always had that connection. And to this day, I know she's a huge influence in my life now, even though she's passed over when I was seven. I really believe that her influence and her gentleness influenced my spiritual walk.
There's a lot of power in gentleness, isn't there?
There sure is.
Well, tell us about Lilydale. What is Lilydale? Where is it?
Well, Lilydale is a spiritual community. It was founded in 1844. It's the religion of spiritualism, which has always been open to new thought. It's an hour south of Buffalo and Cassadaca. And every summer, there's various presenters. This summer, one particular person is James Van Praagh will be presenting, and there's many others. And they usually have celebrities at least come in for a short time to speak and do a presentation. It's a very interesting place. People have been comforted from bereavement. They demonstrate the truth of immortality. And they've shown people the religion of spiritualism. And they have a lot of free things that you can attend there. It's very interesting, and I encourage anyone who hasn't been there to at least try to get there this summer if they can.
I can imagine the vibrations must be very high there.
Yes. They are. It's a, people have referred to it as a very healing vortex at the Dale.
Wow. How nice. I've never been there, although I do live in New York State, but quite a few miles from that area. But I have a lot of curiosity about it now. I know that it's not too far from somewhere I have gone, and that's Chautauqua.
Yes.
Which, and I have, been on retreats in Chautauqua, which I've always found very inspiring. Another area in New York where they have many different interesting speakers come during the summer months. And speakers of all different subject areas. And, you know, so maybe if someone was interested in going to either place, they could check out the other on their trip.
Yes. Yes. They're very close by. I think a half an hour distance by car. That's it.
Hmm. So what would be the requirements to become an ordained minister in the Fellowship of the Spirits at Lilydale?
Well, it would be to attend Insight Training 1 and 2. And after completing those weekends, then you can complete an application for school.
Hmm. Great. Well, so at this point, you probably, do you have a church or don't you have a church?
At this point, I don't have a church, but I do, through word of mouth, do different ceremonies, and I have taught spiritual classes in the past, and meditation classes, energy work, mm-hmm. but I don't have my own church at this point.
Mm-hmm. You do can you perform marriages and funerals and things like that?
Yes, and I have mm-hmm. done that, and it's really rewarding work. It really is.
Oh, yes. I bet. Well, let's move on and talk a little bit more in depth about your spiritual gifts. You mentioned that in your biography that you sent me that you did do mediumship. And I wonder if you could describe what that is like for you and for those who benefit from it.
Okay. First I will say people really don't know how it happens, but mm-hmm. After you go through a training and you make a connection, you're in a still, quiet place, and you make a connection, you will hear something. You can even smell something. People have picked up fragrances and various things.
Hmm.
And it's brought to you, and much of the information is surprising at times, and sometimes it won't mm-hmm. make any sense to the person receiving it. But if they say it to the person, it's amazing how profound it is. It can be something very small to most people, but to that person it can be very significant. It could be a symbol, something that only that person would know about in their life.
Mm-hmm.
But the description that comes through is amazing. It's like watching a film sometimes. If you're getting receiving a lot, it's mm-hmm. being unfolded, and, you know, you can pick up various times in maybe the person's life and the kind of work they did. You can get many details. They can bring in objects that, you know, prove, it's called evidential mediumship, where it proves that person specifically. It might be something that they owned, something that was close to them or given to them, and it's really just amazing work, how spirit works in that way because of love. They really bring this all through for healing and for love.
Wow. Do you ever speak in different languages, or is it always been English?
For me, it's always been English. I think... for me, if I were to get another language, because I wasn't strong in that area anyway, but I would get a sense of the person being from another country or maybe being shown a geographical location of where they were from. But some people I know do get language. They can speak it. They can repeat it.
My goodness. What is being a metaphysician, what does that include?
Well, as a metaphysician, basically you develop your own spiritual practices and you help others to develop theirs. And it might be through teaching, it might be showing by demonstration the energy work itself, discussion, just helping people and yourself to go deeper and go further along the spiritual journey.
Interesting. Well, why don't we just give our listeners an opportunity to get in touch with you? Of course, all of our listeners, if they're interested in speaking with Reverend Kelly, they can call in our guest call-in number at 646-727-3116. But, Reverend Kelly, why don't you tell our listeners how they could get in touch with you otherwise?
Yes, they called me. My number is 315-472-1763, and I can schedule an appointment at their convenience and with my time schedule as well.
Great. Just to repeat that, it's area code 315-472-1763.
Yes, that's correct.
So why don't we talk a little bit about your nursing career?
Okay. Right now I'm working more as a counselor, but of course the healing, the nursing background always comes into play as well. And usually when people come in with addictions or some other issue that they're struggling with, depression or anxiety, it really helps when they can see that so much of it has to do with understanding where some of those feelings are coming from and what is the obstacle in their life. Sometimes it's avoidance, and when they can see that it's avoidance and not being able to get to that quiet place to start to look at some things to change, it's amazing what opens up the door for them. Just having that time to stop and to look at their life is very helpful.
I know that there's a very large psychological component to that and a spiritual component as well, but there's also that physical component as well. And that's what I would imagine makes it doubly hard to deal with addictions.
Yes, especially some chemicals are more, they have a stronger withdrawal than others. But if, you know, they can come to this point where they understand it's only going to be a set amount of days or hours, and if they can get through that, stay busy to remove their focus on that, it helps them to get through that challenging time. And sometimes detox is necessary because the symptoms are so overwhelming that they need that time to be monitored and given medication if necessary.
I know I've been hearing a lot about heroin being almost epidemic in our area of central New York. And I'm wondering if you are working with people who are doing heroin.
Yes, I do work with people who have used heroin. And, you know, their struggles are quite significant. Heroin is cheaper than using other opiates, so that's why it's become so prevalent in our community. And it's also an issue because it's created some behaviors, because it's something that you want to hide. So it reinforces a lot of the negative behaviors that are already present with addiction. So there's a struggle there to overcome the behaviors, overcome the physical aspects of the withdrawal and the psychological as well as the spiritual, because people feel a lot of shame, they feel a lot of, you know, guilt, and they've kept it from their family usually until it gets to the point where they can no longer keep it a secret.
I think that that brings up a very important focal point, I'm quite sure, of your career, and that is the issue of low self-esteem in people. And that probably has some relationship to addiction. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. You are right. It's not feeling good about yourself. It just keeps reinforcing that negativity. And it's, I would say, almost impossible to heal or get beyond that point until there's some work done about accepting that there's an issue. Starting to work on the problem immediately starts to raise the self-esteem. And if you can continue on that journey, you feel better and better about yourself. So it's very important to get some time away from the chemical, some insight into what can be done to get beyond that initial state and to continue doing the recovery work.
Do you encourage the people that you work with to join 12-step programs?
Yes, I really do, because it's a process that's going to be going on really lifelong, and to have as much support in your life and to be with people that are struggling with the same issues is very helpful. There's a bond there. It's a very good program. It's very psychologically and spiritually based. And I think that people who have been using for many years need to replace it with something positive, and that's a perfect resource.
I noticed you mentioned something about heroin being cheaper than some of the other drugs. So my guess is that poverty also goes hand in hand with a lot of addictions, although I'm sure people from all different economic strata have addictions, of course, but I would imagine it would be acutely difficult for people who are less economically advantaged, especially
in terms of finding,
for example, the resources to pay for the counseling or the help. Are there any systems in place that would help people afford to get good help?
Yes. Well, at the hospital that I work at, they do a sliding scale, and they try to get people insurance wherever possible, wherever they can be eligible for that. They do work with people to do that. And if they're between, just enough of a cap with their income that they don't qualify, they do a sliding scale, and they're very good about the rate. It's because of grants that are given to promote that. They do have the treatment available for people who do not have insurance for outpatient, primarily.
I know one of the topics of conversation in my local community is our Senator Michael Nozzolio has proposed the possibility of using prisons that are being closed to serve as substance abuse treatment centers. I don't know what your thoughts on that would be.
I'm wondering if he's looking to do maybe both inpatient and outpatient. And I think in some areas there are not enough treatment centers to reach all the people that need it. And I think rather than just have them idle, if they were going to do some good work with it, some positive work, I think it would be a good thing. I really do. I think, there's more need than maybe we are even aware of in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, this brings me to another question, too. Knowing that these people, and I guess I shouldn't say these people, all of us, I think, have some form of addiction or other.
Yeah.
How would you integrate your spiritual gifts into your practice as a mental health counselor?
Well, I think that the spirituality piece is really important because I like to use my definition for spirituality is the appreciation of all that is beautiful. And I think that...
I love that definition.
That people can accept so much when they, you know, it's non-judgmental, it's unconditional. And from that point, be curious to look for things that interest them. And I think that's a big problem with addictions across the board, like you pointed out. We all have them, and we use our different addictions, I believe, to escape. Maybe it's from boredom, or it's from just not having any interest, or not having goals set, or feeling fulfilled in some way. And I think spirituality fills us. I think the more we go on our spiritual path, it's so broad and so vast. There's just so much of it and so many levels to learn that we feel better and better, and we feel excited about our life and about who we are. And I think that spirituality really is the answer for many things in our life. And I think if we can open up to that possibility of at least trying it, reading a few books, going to a few seminars, doing something different, even just meditating for 5 minutes a day, starting there, quieting our spirit, being out in nature more, just making it a point to do that, and drink in that green that is so abundant, that we begin to want more and more of that peacefulness. And I think then we explore more and we feel very good about ourselves. We find a purpose in life.
And I would imagine seeking out a community of others who are also in the same boat, in a sense, because I would imagine it would be difficult for an addict to, you know, be seeking treatment, but then have to go back into the environment where he came from or she, and then having to cope with the same issues without, you know, I would say probably it was extremely important for them to get some kind of community support.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That support is critical in the outcome of their life. To be able to just have someone in their corner that they can talk to and just even talk about their day or their dreams or their hopes or just whatever's on their mind is huge, because a big part of addiction is that non-communication, just removing yourself from a lot of that, being in touch with who you are or being able to verbalize what you think and feel.
Yes, I know I struggle with food addictions, and it's hard not to, you know, it's hard not to eat, of course. Yeah. And, you know, in Auburn, there are some groups that get together relating to food addictions, and I, you know, you're inspiring me to go check some of them out.
I think food addiction is a very difficult one. I always give the example of a triple chocolate layer cake, and if it was sitting on the table and you were smelling it, it would be very hard to walk away from that. You know, it's, you know, in comparison to, it's not the same as a chemical, but for someone who has an addiction to chocolate or sugar, that could be every bit as challenging.
Oh, yes, I can imagine it would be. Absolutely. Yes, I was just wanting to go into a little bit more depth about addiction, you know, and we've already covered some of the more effective ways of dealing with addiction, but just kind of broadening out the conversation a little, what do you think we as a society, what role do we play in enabling addictive behavior?
Well, I think... sometimes the way we're told or we're brought up to help and serve all the time. And I think we have this sense that sometimes when we see someone struggling, we tend to want to take care of it. We want to fix it or take the pain away and also feel that pain through someone that's feeling it. And it's a good thing to be empathetic and to have compassion mm-hmm. in our life. The thing that happens is when we see addictions, especially if we've never had to cope with it before, we really don't know how to handle it. We think that trying to do things for people will put less stress on the person that's got the addiction, and it will help mm-hmm. them. And it yeah. is a twist that we have to learn, that it actually isn't helping them, because they become dependent on a substance, and they can become dependent on a person doing things for them. And it's a very challenging and difficult thing, I think, for most people to understand about enabling someone with an addiction. Mm-hmm. And I think Al-Anon, Alateen, and, these types of 12-step programs, if you're living with an active addict, or maybe you have some unresolved issues growing up in a family of addiction, they're very helpful in understanding that, because there's so many things that impact us. Being in an environment where we readjust our own behavior from what's mm-hmm. happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you see as your next steps in your career?
Well, I would like to be more active as a minister. I see that I am setting goals more and more to open myself to more teaching and also more mediumship. I also would like to do some more fun activities around spirituality. Because I think one part of spirituality that sometimes goes unnoticed is the spirituality of fun. And I think that when we are having fun, our vibrations are coming up, and we want to stay more in that than, worrying about things or, getting too concerned with things that we can, put on the back burner for a while. And I think we don't see fun as so important. And I'm learning more and more, even for myself, how much energy that brings to me if I engage in more fun activities.
That's great. I love that. Now, I understand you have children and grandchildren.
Yes. And they're growing up, and I had such fun with them when they were, through their stages. My youngest is about to turn 9, my youngest granddaughter, and my oldest granddaughter will be 13 in September. And my other grandson he turned 13 in January. So my grandchildren are starting to get into that phase where they're very busy with scouts, and they're becoming their own little person, which is wonderful. I love to see it. But to see the changes has been great. And my children are grown and working hard and, providing well for their children.
Christine, I see we have a caller. Would you like to take the call?
Sure, yes.
Okay, one moment, please. Hello, you're on Your Turn to Speak. May I have your name?
Hi, my name is Chuck.
Hi, Chuck.
Chuck, do you have a question for Reverend
Kelly? I have a question for Christine.
Yes.
I was interested in your discussion right now and was wondering, Christine, in your work where you have sessions with people who have addictions?
Yes.
I was wondering just how much do you experience on the subject of responsibility, that do a lot of those people with addictions, from your take on it, seem to believe that they were a victim somehow, or are some of them trying to take responsibility, or do you coach in any way in that practice or your other one? where you're helping them to understand how we all get what we get? Those are my questions. Sorry, it was so many at once.
That's okay. Those are good questions. And I think you're absolutely right. I think that our tendency is, in any situations where we're having some pain or not knowing the way out, we tend to think it's other things or it's circumstances or it's people in our lives. And we do spend a lot of time in treatment explaining and teaching that we have to, no matter what, take total responsibility for our actions, and that creates the outcomes. The cause and effect in our life is real, and that when we can accept responsibility for our behaviors and our thinking that does create our actions, we can start to heal and improve our life.
It, you know, as you say, it makes me think probably a nice approach to that might be to somehow find a way of convincing them of how they're getting what they're getting, how we're all getting what we're getting, like you guys were mentioning, you know, choice of thought and so on as a factor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering,
yeah.
It must be kind of difficult to try to talk with someone that doesn't want to get that at all, or do some people try?
Well, you are right, and part of the treatment is understanding that, you know, we have to take the responsibility for wanting to change. And first we have to recognize that we need to change. And that isn't always seen right away. It's a process.
Right.
And it is amazing, though, if people can keep hearing that throughout their process of treatment, that in the end, if they're really trying to change and they're following the instructions and, you know, the insights that they're gaining along the way, try it. You know, try to be more positive. When you get a negative thought, try to replace it with a positive thought, you know, and see if any of these changes make a difference in your life. And I can think of different clients that I have worked with that actually were very angry upon entering treatment, but, of course, didn't believe it was going to happen. But when they saw results in their life from changing their attitude from negativity to positivity, they were amazed. And it was a huge change.
It's probably very rewarding when you see that in some of the people to see that they're making the effort and they're having progress. I came across something recently that said and I'm paraphrasing now, the results of someone talking, let's say a doctor with a patient, that the real lasting change and a good outcome or not seemed to be through some research that I was reading about, seemed to be dependent upon the relationship with the doctor. In other words, and so you as a counselor,
mm-hmm.
and your voice is soothing, so I imagine, you know, you probably do pretty good with people, but do you consider that at all? Have you ever considered that even more than what you teach them or show them or, you know, that what we sow is what we reap and so on, may not be as important as how you're getting along with them. I was wondering what your take on that might be.
Yes, thank you, and that is absolutely true. I think to gain trust and understanding, that relationship is very important. That if that doesn't happen, they're not going to open up and admit to certain things that are troubling them or even that change is possible. I really think it's just being with an unconditional regard toward them and really listening to them. Just even things like this opens the door for healing and change.
Well, it's good to hear you say that, because I was going to say that, you know, by you entering those arenas with unconditional love, it sounds like that's what you're just describing, that you really, you know, look for the good in people. And you know, that seems to be the bottom line of relationships, is the ability to let go of concepts and, you know, preconceptions about addicts are always da-da-da-da, and more into that mode of, you know, like you're saying, listening and, you know, with your heart, probably is a part of that outcome of good therapy taking a positive turn because of the relationship with the doctor and the patient, so to speak. Just food for thought, and I'm sure you bring that to the table, but it sounds like you're doing good work, and it sounds like, yeah, follow your passion more of, you know, maybe affecting people on a wider scale through the writing and lecturing and so on. Well, thanks for talking. Appreciate it.
Chuck, thank you so much for calling in. I think you had a very valuable contribution to our discussion tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth, too. Enjoy your show.
Thank you. I think Chuck raised a very important point about, you know, having that, I know it's got to be a very graceful dance between establishing appropriate boundaries with your clients, but yet also projecting to them a certain belief in them, a certain love for them. You know, it's got to be kind of a very a unique and special kind of love between a therapist and a patient. And I'm sure that that has a lot to do with someone's ability to cope with their addictions.
Yes, I think you're right. And I think that is so true, Beth, having that dance, that fine dance, because sometimes, you know, the response of wanting to get someone from point A to point B and having that interchange where you can see the work happening and seeing the exchange, the trust that wasn't there early on when they came in, and being able to finally open up and share honestly. But it's such rewarding work for the person, you know, helping the person heal and open up and have hopes and dreams and goals. And I think that's a big part of the recovery process, that so many times people just have stopped hoping and dreaming and thinking that their life can get better.
Right. And, you know, I think, too, that idea of hope is so crucial, because I can imagine that there would be a very big, you know, heavy bricks type feeling of defeat that, you know, would probably make it very difficult for someone to take those initial steps in seeking help. But to be able to somehow come to that point, and of course, I guess, like as in the 12-step programs, there is that point of surrender as well, a surrender to, you know, knowing that you know, one can't do it on their own.
Yes, yes, that's a huge point. And you're right, it's that courage of the person to start the process. It takes a lot of courage.
Right. One of the things that I see on your brochure is that you do prophecies. Could you explain that a little bit?
Well, sometimes, you know, it's kind of, when you're in mediumship and you're seeing things, you can see events or circumstances that are arriving in the future. And that I use as part of my mediumship, or also just in conversation sometimes when you're sitting in a counseling, spiritual counseling session, you can begin to see, you could see the person in certain roles, or you could see them making important decisions in their life. And I use that gift of prophecy at that point to help guide them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And when you say energy work, what does that exactly mean for you?
For me, it's focused energy. Some people would understand the modality of Reiki, but energy work isn't necessarily Reiki, but it's in the same arena. But you're focusing your energy, and it goes to the area that needs to be healed. And it might be an emotional healing, it might be a physical or a spiritual healing. And people who receive it can feel different sensations. Sometimes they can see colors as a result of energy work done on them. And they have a sense of peace and calm. And usually they're very relaxed as a result of energy work.
Christine, I see that there's another caller. Would you like to take the call?
Sure, yes.
Hey, one moment, please. Hello, you've reached your turn to speak. May I have your name?
Sure, my name's Donna. It's my first time calling.
Yes, would you have a question for Reverend Kelly?
No, I was just actually, not really. Can I leave it open? Should I have a question? I'm not really sure how specific.
Is there a particular subject?
No, not really. Just maybe relationship-wise. Maybe what you can see in that area as far as my current relationship.
Okay. I'm just wanting to make sure I understand the question.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking if I see anything for your relationship?
Yeah, just anything. If it's going to be, if there's going to be a commitment somewhere down the road or just anything in that, related to that as far as.
Okay. And your first name is Colleen? Is that what I heard you say?
No, my name is Donna.
Donna. I'm just getting a sense that right now you're doing a lot of questioning and you're hoping for this to happen in your life, and I'm not getting a whole lot of specifics. I would really kind of need to do a one-to-one with you and come in on your vibration, but I feel that this is the real questioning time for you is what I'm getting at this time. And I think that you're kind of making a list and kind of prioritizing what's important in your life. And a relationship is one of the higher things on your list. And I'm feeling that, just getting into that quiet place. And do you meditate now at all?
Yes.
And just, ask a question when you're meditating and then listen for the answer, because I'm feeling there's a few questions going on for you right now. So to do that and to hear what you get in return. Do you see yourself as intuitive?
I do, yeah.
Yes. So you can get the answers for yourself, because I'm picking that up that, you are intuitive and working on some of those trust things with that intuition. And you will hear what you want, what you need to hear in that of your life.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay.
You're
Donna,
welcome.
Thank you for calling. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you want to ask another question? Okay, I guess she's off the air now.
Oh, okay.
Where were we here? Yes, so your presentations, could organizations or churches contact you to give presentations, and if so, what are your usual subjects of presentation? Would they be relating to the mediumship, or what would you usually do to present?
I've done various presentations. One was Creativity and Joy.
That sounds great.
And it was a lot of fun. And I've done another co-facilitation, and we talked about Lily Dale, and we demonstrated mediumship, and that was fun. That a lot of interesting things came in with that. And I've done another one mostly on just really bringing in that positive intuitive energy and showing people how that's done in their life. But I've done other presentations as well. But primarily, I've been doing more along that line.
Cool. Now, in the creativity and joy presentation, do you do, like, hands-on kinds of things?
I could. What I did is I did a little bit of a lecture. Then we sang a song.
Oh, I love to sing.
Yeah. it was really nice. And everyone really got involved in it.
That's a certain way to raise vibrations.
Yes. And it was good. I find that people want to have connectedness, and they want to talk about how do I bring more joy into my life, and how do I do it in tangible ways.
Right. Well, that sounds like a wonderful, wonderful presentation. I would like to participate in that. If I could ever hear about it, I would join in on that one.
Well, thank you.
So we're almost getting now down to the final minutes of our time here together. So I wonder if just a couple things. You can answer this in either way. I usually ask my guests what their vision of a better world would be. Or I might rephrase it by saying, considering Chuck's focus on responsibility, what would be your vision of a way we all could make this a better world?
I think that what Chuck brought in was important about when we accept responsibility in our life, then we really do get all the wonderful things that we want, joy, creativity, insight, and that it seems like that's the one thing that from an early age we tend to want to escape is taking full responsibility. But I think it's a freeing attitude because we've become so aware of who we are and what we want in our life. And that's important. We can't ask for things in our life even if we don't know what they are. And by first accepting responsibility for what we want or how we want our life to be, we can have that happen for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know myself when I'm around people who I feel are very responsible, it's very uplifting for me, who otherwise sometimes takes on more responsibility than maybe would be my share.
Yes.
And it's just always a great feeling of liberation when I'm with people who work as a team to be responsible together. And, you know, I really do agree that would make it a better world if we all kind of chipped in, put in a little bit more effort.
Yes.
So if we could conclude with just some final words of encouragement to those dealing with addictions.
I think that there's a lot of hope for addiction. I think that initially it feels overwhelming, but when you practice the principles of recovery, you have such a much fuller life than you could ever dream. It doesn't mean there isn't going to be a lot of hard work. It isn't going to be a direct path. But I just think that people who have gone through the journey just feel so good about themselves and so hopeful about life that it is a journey, and all the work, the hard work put into it, it is the reward of a much richer life. And I really believe
that. That is so great. Great, encouraging words. Well, this brings to a conclusion our episode for this evening, and I want to thank Reverend Christine Kelly once more for her wonderful insights that she shared with us this evening. And just one more time, give a contact number for her. Her phone number is area code 315-472-1763. And if you have any issues you would like to speak with her about, she will be there to take your appointment or take your call. So I thank you all for joining us this evening, and we hope that you tune in again next Tuesday night at 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time for another episode of Your Turn to Speak. But until then, may your voice be heard.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet.
You have been listening to Your Turn to Speak with host Beth Miller. Each week, Beth features guests whose important views are often overlooked in the mainstream dialogue. You can listen to this show again at freespiritbroadcasting.com. And be sure to tune in next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern for another live, inspiring conversation on Your Turn to Speak.